This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer.
And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis and Chesterfield Fence and Deck.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
Every weekday from noon until 1 o'clock, it is the Gas House Gang. Today, it's Bernie Miklas and Chris Ranji on this Thursday. Good to have you along. We're going to talk to Joe Roderick at 12:30. He will join this show as we've got plenty to discuss today, as we always do. 314-436-7900 to text into the show with your thoughts throughout the day. You can also watch on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. Find us at KMOX Sports on Twitter as we are streaming live there. And Bernie, a lot to get into. I know we're going to talk a little Billikens basketball today. This will be your last show with me for the week before the Super Bowl happens on Sunday. I want to get your thoughts on that game. But let's talk about the Cardinals right now, because they have now really executed a bunch of trades during this offseason, with Sonny Gray being traded away. You've had now the most recent trade, Brendan Donovan, who is now off to the Seattle Mariners. And I know that we talked a little bit about this on Tuesday, but people are really interested in the direction of the Cardinals. And I know fans want to have real clarity as to what this team is doing now, what they expect to be in two or three seasons. And one thing we could say is, at least from what I have been able to tell so far, that universally, nationally, people think the Cardinals have done pretty well in these deals as far as building up a farm system, which is one of the number one goals of the organization under Chaim Bloom right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And they have. Because you have to view this through, you know, a very specific lens, which is this is a rebuild. You know, they're not a contender, so they're not going to go out and spend money just to add like a $15 million guy that really doesn't fit a rebuild, you know? So, Chaim Bloom is off to a fantastic start. I mean, yesterday in these four trades, he got over a dozen prospects plus two draft choices and good prospects, a large percentage of whom made the Cardinals are already on the Cardinals' top prospects list. The Cardinals have they're tied with Seattle for having the most players in the top 100 prospects overall in the major leagues with six.
It's six now, yeah. And I think the Guardians are up there, right? Guardians are five or six. They're somewhere up
there. No, according to MLB Pipeline, I mean, okay. The Cardinals and Seattle are tied for first with six.
Got it.
Maybe something else happened that I'm not aware of. Yesterday, Baseball America, which I think is the granddaddy of them all, they do a great job. They've been doing this longer than any media entity, and they have a big staff. They came out with their farm system rankings, and the Cardinals are second. And less than a year ago, Baseball America had them at 19th, or might have been 18th. So they've gone from 18th to second in less than a year. They're tied for first in the Fangraphs farm system rankings with the Pirates. They're seventh in ESPN, and ESPN last year had them at 19th, so they've jumped 12 spots in less than a year. And, I mean, I could go in the MLB pipeline. They're also, I believe, in the top 10. So, yeah, I mean, the tangible progress is real. I mean, I feel like I have to say this every single time I talk about it. Because whenever I talk about what a great start they're off to in the rebuild, which it, after all, is all about bringing as much good, young, prominent talent into your system as you can and start to build your future. Every time I talk about it, you know, there's 25 comments about like, well, you know, it's not like all these prospects will make it and they'll be great. Well, yeah, I know that. We all know that. Okay. But the more of them that you collect, it increases your odds of getting good talent into this organization. If you have five good prospects, you'll have a shot to maybe one of them will come through big. If you have 20 good prospects, you're going to get more of them coming in big. So, you know, this is just not that complicated.
It is a numbers game. The more top 100s you have, there's a greater likelihood that one or two of them are going to pan out. Whereas if you only have one top 100 prospect, the odds are high that the only top 100 you have is not going to work out for you. So it is, it's like throwing numbers, and it's not about just the quantity of minor leaguers that they have or young talent that they have acquired, because that doesn't really do you much good. I mean, you can acquire 20 young players in an offseason, and none of them are of quality, but the Cardinals seem to have picked up quite a bit of quality here, and you don't know for sure about any of them, but the pedigree is there, and the odds are that you're going to have at least a couple from this group that'll end up on a big league roster and actually contributing within a season or two.
Yeah, I think it even could be higher, because there's some of these young pitchers that I think are going to be on a fast track. And I think, you know, Liam Doyle is going to be in a fast track. I think some other young pitchers are going to be in a fast track. Young relievers are going to be on a fast track. They even have, you have Josh Baez and you have Raniel Rodriguez. They're two great hitting prospects. They're on a fast track. You got these guys from Seattle. Senja was the 15th overall pick a couple years ago in the draft. That's not anything to fool around about. That's elite talent right there. And then the other two prospects were drafted. One was drafted in the first round. Another one was drafted in the second round. Plus, Heim Bloom picked up two more draft picks, which means the Cardinals will have six of the top 86 of the 2026 draft. And the more you have, the more talent you can find. And by the way, and I did a little study yesterday. If we have time, I'll share some of it. Heim Bloom in Boston found solid gold in some picks that came later in the draft. The Cardinals will have a chance because in their own history, they have found players, drafted players from like 72nd or later in the draft who were a big part of those great winning clubs. So this fits what we were talking about with the prospects that are already here, and it applies to the draft picks that they're going to have in a few months. The more darts you have to throw towards the bullseye, the more darts you can aim at the bullseye, the better chance you will have at hitting the bullseye. That analogy to me sums it up perfectly.
You know, you also touched on something here that the Cardinals have been successful in later rounds of the draft, and most famously, I think, would be Albert, who is one of the best players they've ever had.
Yeah. He was one of them for sure. Yeah.
Right. And Yadi, I don't think you'd call fourth round a later round, but it wasn't a first round pick. So you've got two Hall of Famers drafted fourth round or later. And, you know, we all believe Yadi's going to get in, whether it's first ballot or not. He's very likely a Hall of Famer at this point. And I have seen Cardinals fans in the last few days say things like, and most of it on social media, that one of the reasons the Cardinals were so successful is because of that, because they got pretty fortunate in selecting Albert and having him be a 13th rounder who turns into a Hall of Famer, and then having Yadi, a future Hall of Famer, on that team for so many years together. Is that where the Cardinals are or need to be, that they are not just drafting good, solid players, but that maybe they need to hit it big on one of these draft picks or one of these minor leaguers who turn into actual stars?
Yeah, I think they're going to have more than that. I think they're going to have, you know, three or four stars. I'm not talking about Albert Pujols, Yadier Molina stars. I mean, let's be reasonable here, right? There's only one Albert Pujols like ever. That's not going to happen again in St. Louis. And Molina is a once in a lifetime catcher.
Right.
That's not going to happen in St. Louis. But you just accumulate as much talent as you can. I mean, some of the guys they drafted through the years that came much later in the draft, Matt Carpenter, Tommy Edman, Trevor Rosenthal, Harrison Bader, Joe Kelly, Seth Maness, Matt Adams. I mean, and there's a bunch of others, on and on and on. And those guys helped the Cardinals win divisions and win playoff rounds, win a pennant. So, you just got to keep collecting it. And, you know, the thing I like about it now, though, is the Cardinals have the player development system in place with a whole new staff down there. And my friend Keith Law was writing the other day about how he identified three or four prospects that the Cardinals' new people in charge of the farm system, the player development, have already made a significant difference in improving the prospects. And Keith Law's a pretty tough dude. He doesn't throw compliments around very easily. But he believes those guys have like really getting this player development thing humming because they know how to see a player's problem. They know how to identify it, and then they have good ideas about how to fix it. They did that with Josh Baez, who was basically a bust before these guys moved in. Now he may be in St. Louis sometime this year. Now he's one of their top five prospects. He was basically a bust before the new regime took over.
And I like that you brought up Keith Law. And the reason I like it is he tends to, or people tend to think, that he is overly critical of their teams and that he doesn't often give praise when it should be given. And the fact that he does it, I think, is noticeable.
Yeah.
The fact that Keith Law, who is really critical of farm systems, the fact that he is giving endorsements is kind of a big deal. It doesn't mean he's right, but it means somebody who's got a bit of a skeptical eye is noticing what they're doing. And I think that's important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's discerning that's really important to be discerning. And, you know, it's funny, the Cardinals got a guy named Jesus Baez in the Ryan Helsley deal last summer. And Keith Law hated the kid, not personally. He basically just trashed him as a prospect. And so he came back this year, and he has this kid on the Cardinals' top 20 prospect list. But he said, you know, when they got him, I hated it because I thought he was out of shape. I thought he was lazy. He wasn't running out ground balls. He's got a lot to prove. He needs to grow up. So, see, that was a guy that he put on his top 20 prospect list. But he took the time to tell you everything that's wrong and what needs to change. See, that was a typical Keith Law example. He doesn't just toss flowers around. You know, he'll tell you what he really thinks and what he perceives to be 100% true about a prospect, whether it's good or bad or something in between.
That's Bernie Miklas. I'm Chris Ronji. The show is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, SaligaHeatingAndCooling.com, also by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis. Joe Roderick will join the show at 12:30. He is at the Super Bowl. He is there covering it. The game is this Sunday. Man, it's close. The season is almost over. We'll talk to Bernie about that. We'll talk to Joe about it as well at 12:30. It's the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Gas House Gang is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling. And with Bernie with us, Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin dealer. Chris Ronji with you as well. 314-436-7900 to text in, or you can leave us messages, comments on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. And speaking of streaming, you can stream the show on those platforms. And streaming is going to be very big for the Cardinals coming up here in 2026. As we heard earlier in the week, there is no more FanDuel Sports Network. And we won't be for the Cardinals anyway. Blues broadcasts will continue to be there through the remainder of the regular season. But for the Cardinals, it's going to be a different deal. Cardinals TV is going to be a reality for them. There will be streaming packages. Also, we have learned based on reporting that there is a significant drop for the Cardinals in terms of money they can use for payroll, for minor league operations, for anything else because of that TV rights money, which is going to be significantly less than they were hoping to get this year. So, Bernie, with all of this happening, I know Cardinals fans just want to know, can they watch the games? Yes, you'll be able to watch the games on TV, but there are some implications for the roster moving forward, some implications for the money they have to spend as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is a perfect reflection, although it's the way it's worked out is very imperfect for the Cardinals, but this is a sign of the times because, it was not that long ago, 2015, where the Cardinals signed a 15-year deal, $1.1 billion with Fox Sports Midwest. They also got an equity stake in the company. And that basically the Cardinals were going to get about $73.3 million a year just for when their local TV broadcast money. Then the Fox Sports regional networks were sold and they ended up in the wrong hands, and Diamond Sports never had the money that they claimed they had, and that they had a declare bankruptcy. They were missing payments. So the Cardinals went from 73, that started in 2018, that contract. They went from $73.3 million in 2018, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, at least through 2023. And then all of a sudden, Diamond Sports, which was having all these terrible problems, the Cardinals had to renegotiate and agree to take $58 million. And then that $58 million a year, all of a sudden now is $20 million. So the Cardinals have gone from, in a relatively short time, $73 million in annual local TV revenue down to 20. And over the last two seasons, they've also lost a million, just under a million ticket sales to home games. So the point is, if you got to rebuild, this is probably a great time to do it, because you can lower the payroll and you can reduce costs, and you know you're not going to be able to contend. So you can take care of the problems that this organization has had at the roots level, the grassroots level, by rebuilding that farm system and the player development system and getting a good flow, good funnel of young talent up here, which they needed to start doing years ago. But the Cardinals have really taken some hits. And listen, the DeWitt family's fine, okay? They're fine. They're not going to have to apply for any kind of, you know, assistance.
Yeah, they'll be all right.
They're fine. And the franchise value, I think, is dropping, but it's fine. But that's not really the point. The point is, they've always operated this team based on what revenue they have that's coming in. You know, they've never gone like really above their revenue level that was coming in. And you don't have to like it, but they've done that from day one. Well, now the revenue coming in is so low relative to what it used to be. And that's the key, what it used to be. I tell you, Chris, I can't predict where this thing is headed. You know, you'd like to say, well, you know, it's going to stabilize and everything's going to be fine, blah, blah. Is it going to stabilize? How do we know that? I mean, that industry, like all media industries, is so volatile and so unpredictable and so wild and so unstable. You know, I'm not trying to be dramatic here. I'm being absolutely sincere. You know, I worry about the Cardinals in terms of like getting back to where they used to be. I worry that it's going to be a lot more difficult than just rebuilding, because when you need to top off your roster with more elite, expensive talent, I don't know what kind of shape they're going to be in financially when it comes time to do that.
Yeah, that's a really good question, because we're talking, I mean, if we're being honest, it's a couple of years, if not more, before the Cardinals, I think, are in position where they feel like they have a good, young backbone of talent, and then it's time to add to that talent with a free agent or acquiring a player who's got a pretty hefty contract from somewhere else. And maybe the Cardinals have to, you know, go, I don't want to say go on the cheap, but maybe they have to go bargain hunting in those cases, which isn't always the best way to do it. And a lot of times it is not the best way to do it. I'm with you on that I hope that 3 years from now, when it's time to do that, that they don't have to stall a bit and say, well, we'd like to get this premier center fielder or right fielder or whatever it is, but we can't afford that, so we're gonna go bargain bin hunting and then hope that guy gives us a year that we wouldn't have expected, but maybe he overperforms. I hope that's not where they are, right? But if they're losing between $20 to $60 million on rights fees, that will affect how much they have to spend a few years from now. And my understanding is that I think the team has to assume some of the production costs now of these games being aired through MLB, as opposed to FanDuel taking care of all of it, which that also has financial implications.
No doubt about it. And we're into some uncertain times, but I'll say this about Chaim Bloom. If you're going through something like this, I think they've got the right guy to help guide you, because he spent all those years, 2007, I think, through 2019, in that brilliant Tampa Bay Rays front office,
mm-hmm.
where they got a lot done with one of the lowest payrolls in baseball over, you know, a 20-year period. He comes from a background where they're great at the draft. They know how to find those value players, those signings that you talk about. And even in Boston, where he got a raw deal, I mean, he drafted some great players while he was there. So his background fits the situation the Cardinals are in. But as Bill DeWitt told me, they, you know, when we were talking about Bloom, when they get to the point where they're good again and they're contending again, you know, Bill DeWitt wants to make sure they keep some of these great young players they have and also go get more talent,
right,
the way they did with Edmonds and Rowland and Larry Walker and so many others. Well, I just think all that stuff's up in the air until we know, for, you know, with some certainty what this TV picture is going to look like 5 years from now.
Yeah, this is, it's one to watch, and we don't really are not going to have answers for that for some time. We did talk to Chaim Bloom about it on Tuesday, and he acknowledged the reality of having less money because of the TV deal, and that will affect payroll. It will affect what they have to spend. So all we can do is keep an eye on it and hope. Bernie Miklas, Chris Ronji, we've got Joe Roderick from STL Sports Central coming up next. He is going to be joining us from Radio Row at the Super Bowl. Looking forward to having a conversation with him. The Gas House Gang is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling. SaligaHeatingandCooling.com and Overhead Door Company of St. Louis. At Super Bowl 60, it is happening near San Francisco, and it is the Seahawks favored against the Patriots. Joe Roderick from STL Sports Central joins us here on the Gas House Gang with Bernie Miklas and Chris Ronji, and Joe is there at Radio Row. And he's talking with us now. What's it? What does it look like at Radio Row these days?
It is. It's nothing. Bernie, I know you've been there many times. It looks nothing like that anymore. It is all around the outsides. You have these huge, massive setups. Like Pat McAfee has his own, like has like a house built for him where he does his show from. And it used to be all of that around the outside. Like it used to be pretty big around the outside. And then you just have table after table with radio equipment on it on the inside. That has changed over the last couple of years. Now everybody has to have their massive 9x9 backdrops. There's a table that I'm by, which Bernie, by the way, Woody Page says hello.
My man.
Yeah. And also Chris Ronji, Rock wanted me to say what's up, Bach.
Oh, well. Rock Mamola, my guy.
I think I'm the only one here that calls him that. But anyway, there are people that they have these massive sets, these tall chairs, tables, TVs with their logos on. It's too much because I think, and this is, I mean, I'm only 40, so I'm trying not to be old man yells at cloud here. But one of the things I loved about doing radio there and being live was having the camera going and seeing all of the people walking behind you. You could be doing an interview with one Hall of Famer, and then there's two Hall of Famers just standing in the background having a conversation, and that's what the viewers are kind of looking at. But now everybody has these huge, massive backdrops and sets and everything, and you can't tell. You don't get the ambiance of what Media Row is. It's not Radio Row anymore. It's Media Row now.
Hey, can I tell a quick story? Because this feeds into what you're just saying there, my friend Joe. 1 year at the Super Bowl, you're right. That's when all these big elaborate sets were, being put up. And then, you know, each show had like 18 producers and all that crap, right? So I'm sitting there and Oscar De La Hoya and Floyd Mayweather, they were pumping up their fight, upcoming fight, which was about 2 or 3 months away. And so I was interviewing Oscar De La Hoya, and before any of that, there was an agreement that those two would not appear on the same show under any circumstances. So I'm talking to Oscar, and guess who shows up at the table and sits down and starts talking trash? It was. I'm sitting there, this little table, all by myself. Nothing. No cameras. Nothing. No big sets. No 20 producers. I didn't even have a producer. And so Floyd Mayweather sets up at the table and starts screaming at De La Hoya. And this was not a stage thing. De La Hoya was stunned. And then all these handlers rushed in to like break it up. And, you know, I think one of them threw a punch. And I'm like, you know what? Little old me from little old KFNS, I got the best interview of the week with Radio Row, right?
There was almost a fight apparently yesterday here on Radio. I don't know if you guys saw that on Awful Announcing, but Ryan Leaf is always here. Ryan Leaf's always here walking around. And I guess there's a doctor here who he blames for all of his addiction problems, everything that he has gone through over the years. And that guy is on here doing Radio Row and sitting there talking. And Ryan Leaf just kind of walks up and starts MFing him.
Oh, yes.
And on top of that, starts saying, you know, F you, F Ross Tucker, all of this. So I'm hanging out with Ross Tucker last night, and somebody comes up and goes, "Did you get in a fight today?" He goes, "No." He goes, "But Ryan Leaf yelled at me."
It's crazy.
Dude, that's, I, you know what? I'm not, you would have to ask your colleague, Randy Carricker, Joe, but I want to say that there was a Radio Row incident with Warren Sapp that, okay. I think they were, do you know what I'm talking about, Bernie?
No, I was going to say, there's an incident with Warren Sapp 365 days a year.
It wasn't like, if my memory serves, it wasn't like pushing or shoving or anything, but he was just being a real jerk to maybe DeMarco. I don't know if DeMarco, Randy, somebody there was involved. You'd have to ask Randy about that. But I think that Warren Sapp went after
him. I'll be on with Randy here in a bit, so I'll be sure to bring that up. I was at, one year, I was at the hotel. Warren got arrested one year. So, yeah, he was hanging out with some people maybe he paid and shouldn't have paid to hang out with and got arrested for it.
Prostitutes. So,
yeah, that would be, yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. You're not supposed to do that.
Before I ask my next question, I want to point out that you're KMOX's reporter at the Super Bowl. So, you know, it's great to have you doing that for us, and it's great to be your teammate here at another place. So anyway, all right, here's a question, because we've been fooling around a little bit. Number one, I've been reading pieces this week, so there's no buzz about this game whatsoever. Do you find that to be true?
Yes, it is. This has been very weird. So this is Super Bowl number 14 for me, and it almost seems like the city of San Francisco found out 2 weeks ago that they were hosting this event.
It's like they're hosting an Olympics.
Right. I got in Tuesday. So usually I get in Saturday or Sunday. This year I waited. I got in until Tuesday. I usually go to the opening night, Monday night, opening night. That's when all the players are there. And the past several years, I think it actually started here 10 years ago, they would do it at arenas, these big arenas at night. They would bring fans in. Fans could watch on the TVs as players were getting interviewed at podiums, these big, huge sets. And from what I've been told in the pictures I've seen, the videos I've seen, it was just kind of a little condensed area inside of a hall where the San Jose Sharks play. So first of all, they had to bus all of the media from San Francisco. So I'm in the Moscone Center in downtown San Francisco. The media night availability was in San Jose. The game's in Santa Clara. It's nothing as close at all to anything here. And they just had like about 150 people, they said, like fans just kind of watching from the corner of this. They didn't have the big podiums, and it was just kind of thrown together with that. The NFL Experience, everything was still in crates on Monday. They were opening Tuesday, the NFL Experience here. The Radio Row, the Media Row, is about, I think I've been told, like 120 less tables than they've had in previous years because the fire marshals came in and were like, yeah, this is too many people. So it's kind of just all thrown together. And usually by now, so this is one thing, I'm glad you brought that up, Bernie, because I, you know, I said 14 years I've done this. So I went to how many of those Tom Brady Patriot Super Bowls, and you would see Patriot fans take over the entire city. And it would start at about Wednesday when all the Patriot fans would be here. And because, you know, it was, they knew, hey, the season's starting, we're going to the Super Bowl. Like, yeah, that's a given. Like, we're going to be there. I haven't seen that yet. It's Thursday, and I have not seen this big Boston, New England Patriot contingency just kind of take over the fan base here. I saw that ticket prices have dropped significantly. I would imagine, I mean, San Francisco, Seattle, it's West Coast, so you would think maybe that Seattle fans would start to make their way down here and kind of take over, but you're not seeing downtown just absolutely taken over by NFL fans yet, as I have in previous years.
Well, you got any thoughts on the game itself? What do you think will happen here Sunday?
I have put a little bit of money behind Drake May having a big game. I think the New England coaching staff, I think, is going to be better prepared maybe than the Seattle coaching staff, just based on the history of the people that are coaching the Patriots having been here before. Not in a coaching role, but as players and the coaches that they had that prepared them, I feel like they are better suited to handle everything that this week brings them.
Well, Joe Roderick, STL Sports Central, we appreciate your report from Radio Row at the site of Super Bowl 60. Thank you for talking with us today.
Absolutely, guys. Anytime.
That is Joe Roderick from STL Sports Central. You can also see Bernie there as well. And Bernie, before we get to the break here and before we hear about our friends at Saliga, I do want to say this, that in the last, 20 minutes or so, the St. Louis Business Journal reporting that David Hoffman, who, if you might remember, at one time tried to buy the Blues, said right at an event today that he is interested in buying the Cardinals. So we'll talk a little bit about that when we come back. Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji here on the Gas House Gang. And
now back to the Gas House Gang, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling.
And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis and Chesterfield Fence and Deck.
On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Yeah, Bernie Miklas on the show, and that is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin dealer. I'm Chris Ranji until 1 o'clock. I'll be back tomorrow at noon. And Bernie, within the hour here, a story from the St. Louis Business Journal, as the Business Journal has an event called Advance STL, and it's taking place today at the St. Louis County Library. And David Hoffman, who is a billionaire from Missouri, who you might remember back in 2012, made an attempt to buy the St. Louis Blues. They ultimately went to the group with Tom Stillman, who is in charge right now. But at the event, he and his sons are purchasing or in the midst of purchasing the Pittsburgh Penguins. So they are getting into hockey. And he said, quote, "What we plan to do is buy the Penguins franchise, pay it off, and buy a baseball team. We'd like that to be the Cardinals." So that is something that would not happen for a while, you would think, because it probably takes a little time to pay off a hockey franchise. But and we know that at some point, I mean, you would think anyway, that ownership will, you know, the Cardinals will change hands. They'll go from this ownership group to somewhere else. What are your thoughts on this, though? A billionaire from the state of Missouri ultimately buying the team maybe at some point down the road.
I think it's an interesting story, and I'm really not trying to be cynical here, but I mean, the easy part is announcing that you would like to buy the Cardinals. It doesn't mean you're going to have any success in buying the Cardinals. And, you know, that should be pointed out right at the top, because I've seen some crazy overreaction online to this. You would think that he's moving in at Busch Stadium like tomorrow or something. So let's just calm down a little bit. Yeah. Bill DeWitt's made it clear he wants to keep the Cardinals in the family, and Bill DeWitt III is next in line to take over the family business when Bill decides he's had enough. Whether one of the DeWitts, when it's Bill DeWitt's III's turn, and you know he decides it's a good time to sell the Cardinals, well, then Mr. Hoffman can make his play. And I think a lot of people would make their play. But I right now, as I sit here, it's fun to gossip about, but I have no reason to think that as we sit here today, where I can't like say, well, okay, this is great. This is going to happen. And there's a lot of that out there already. And I just think that I don't rule it out, because like you just said, Chris, you can never rule anything out, especially when wealthy individuals have their mindset on something. I'm just saying, you know, I think this would take a long time to play out. And then it's just in the category of like, well, let's see what happens. And if he wants to step up and, you know, try to do this, more power to him. I encourage him, you know. But I think a lot has to happen before we get to that stage.
According to the Business Journal, Hoffman, after the event, did a separate interview and said that, you know, they haven't talked to the DeWitts about this. And when asked if the franchise is for sale, he said, everybody tells us no. But he also goes on to say, we couldn't do that now anyway. We want to absorb what we bought in Pittsburgh when that goes through. We want to pay that off. We think we can do that in 12 to 24 months. But if the DeWitts would be interested, we'd talk. And I think when people hear this, their first thought is, well, if you are of the Cardinals fan of the mindset that this current organization doesn't spend the money like they should, that you think a Mark Cuban type is going to come in or a Steve Cohen type is going to come in, take over and overspend. I don't know that that's the kind of owner Hoffman would be, but I would also not count on that ever being the case, that you're going to get an owner who comes in. Because think about all the baseball franchises. How many overspend? I mean, it might be one or two. It's not that many, and I don't think it's all that realistic to think that another different billionaire will come in and be that way.
And it's a really uncertain time for baseball, you know, with the labor situation coming up, the TV contracts everywhere, national and otherwise. Just kind of a volatile, forever changing thing. So we'll see. I mean, the DeWitts, I'm going to keep saying it, but the people who don't want to hear it aren't going to listen. You know, the DeWitts let this thing slide the last few years, right? But over the 30-year body of work of their ownership is one of the great eras in Cardinals history. He's one of the three greatest owners in Cardinals history, along with Gussie Bush and, oh my gosh, I'm forgetting my Cardinals history now. The gentleman who was in charge of the Cardinals, you know, from the 20s through the 40s, won the three World Series. I can't believe I'm forgetting the name. But you know, one day,
Vec?
Ricky? No.
What am I thinking of? I don't know.
One day, Bill DeWitt will be in the Cardinals Hall of Fame, and I keep a thing at my every time I feel like I'm being an airhead. I keep a thing on my desk that has the 30-year body of work with him as the owner, and it's incredibly impressive. But we live in a short attention span culture. People can only remember the last couple, 3 years.
Well, here's the other thing. Hoffman was talking about the NHL, and he said that hockey teams annually over the last 10 years have compounded at a growth rate of 11 to 16%. And I think you could argue pretty easily that of all the leagues, the major professional leagues in the United States, NHL is probably the least profitable. It's worth the least of baseball, football, and the NBA. But I think if that's true, that it's an 11 to 16% annual growth for these teams, I think it's very important to keep that in mind, especially when you have an owner who talks about any team of any sport. You know, the amount of risk that they take on. And man, there's so much risk. And, you know, I can't do this or I can't do that. Sports franchises are a fantastic investment. And every single one of these owners in any of the four professional sports, if they sold their franchises tomorrow, every single one of them would make a profit. Every single one. Nobody's losing money in sports.
Absolutely. By the way, Sam Breeden was the owner.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, well, he was with Branch Rickey. Again, Bill DeWitt's one of the three best owners they've ever had, and his legacy will be a very strong one, no matter, you know, when he's no longer involved with it, he's retired or he sells it, whatever it may be. Good luck to the next person to try to top that, the 30 years of Bill DeWitt Jr.'s ownership. Good luck.
Bernie, before we say goodbye here, we want to take a moment to talk about the Billikens. They are not going to play again, Billikens basketball, until Saturday. They got a home game Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock against LaSalle. That game will be here on KMOX. It has been just a tremendous amount of fun to watch a team that has not lost since right around Thanksgiving. They're on a 16-game winning streak, very easily could get to 19. They got LaSalle, Loyola, Rhode Island. If they win those games, they match their record for winning streak. But this Billikens team is just so much fun.
You know, and they've moved up to number 15 in the NCAA net rankings. I mean, that's the SLU hasn't been there since at that rarefied level since you had the Rick Majerus team in 2011 and 12, and then you had the team that he left behind when he got ill that Jim Cruz coached. And so the Cardinals are – the Billikens are going back in time to sort of match the greatness of those teams, and it's really, really exciting. Like you said, this team is so much fun to watch.
Again – the Billikens will play Saturday afternoon, 2 o'clock. We'll have the broadcast at 1:45 here on KMOX. You'll hear Bob Ramsey, Earl Austin Jr., both Sports Hall of Famers. St. Louis Sports Hall of Famer. Now Rammer is in officially, so it's very, very cool. You can hear the game Saturday on KMOX. Bernie, good to talk to you. You will be on Redbird Rush Hour tomorrow at 5.
I will be. Thank you for reminding me. You never know. I can't remember Sam Breeden's name. I might forget everything else.
Buddy, so thank you. I got you. I got you.
All right.
Bernie Miklas.
Love you, man.
You too, my friend. Bernie Miklas, Chris Ronji, the Gas House Gang, back tomorrow with Mike Claiborne, Matt Pauly, hopefully if he's feeling better, and me at 12 o'clock on 104.1 FM KMOX.